Off the Ball, GAA.
Oh, well, it's important to put in some bit of experience along with the new boys, because, you know, they need a bit of direction. And, you know, it was a big night for a lot of them, for us, for the first time wearing the Kerry jersey in a competitive environment.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. This is Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's sports breakfast show.
Morning to Keith Tracy. Good morning, Keith.
Morning, Shane. How are we?
Keeping well. Good morning to Eve Conway. Good morning, Eve.
Good morning.
And good morning to Arthur O'Day. Good morning, Arthur.
It's crack.
Keeping well. I suppose there's only really one place to start. And it's at the Emirates last night. And particularly at the nasty enough scenes. We'll get to Tottenham. Don't worry. Even though you're mad.
Don't worry. You can avoid it as long as possible.
I can see it in your eyes there. Please talk about Tottenham. What did you make of this, Keith? Like the full-time scenes, particularly Gabriel Martinelli and Conor Bradley. For people who haven't seen this, this was a nasty enough incident where Conor Bradley goes down injured. It appears he has a fairly serious looking injuries. Certainly that was the first impression. And Martinelli didn't think so. He thought he was wasting a little bit of time. Arsenal hunting for the winner. And he, well, first of all, throws the ball at Bradley's head, goes over and kind of leans the knee into his back of his head or the back of him a little bit, and then shoves him off the pitch. And the remainder of the players weren't too happy about that, but it was a distasteful moment.
Yeah, it was silly from Martinelli. Initially, I did think that he didn't realise that Bradley was seriously injured, or looks to be seriously injured. When a player, I mean, the head on, when he's running towards the camera and you see him clearing the ball and the knee sort of buckles a little bit, it doesn't look good. I think Martinelli at the start genuinely thinks he's just trying to waste a bit of time and thinks just roll him off the pitch. But yeah, when you see the replay of the knee, and then obviously the replay of Martinelli throwing the ball and just having that little bit of a knee into his back and then the push, it was silly and stupid. And obviously Martinelli's come out and apologised and said he apologised to Bradley's face as well. I think it's been blown out of proportion. I think a lot of people want to say Martinelli's stupid and a bad egg and this and that. He did something silly in the heat of the moment, and people are saying, oh, well, Bradley could be seriously injured. Yes, he could be, but Martinelli didn't do anything like that. He's just trying to push him off the pitch and get the game quickened up that little bit. So an overreaction from Martinelli, not something you can do, but I think Slot was brilliant after it. Didn't throw any petrol onto the fire, neither did Szoboszlai. And I think, thankfully, common sense prevailed, but indefensible what Martinelli did. Absolutely indefensible. But I do think it got taken a little bit to extremes.
Because obviously the player apologises afterwards, which kind of calms everyone down. If Martinelli hadn't said anything after the game, people would be coming for his head. But just one of those. Martinelli's had a bad injury himself, so you almost feel like he should. If any player is going to know better, it should be a player who's had a bad injury. I don't know. It was in the moment I was absolutely fuming. And I know Gary Neville on TV commentary was like, someone should have gone in there and smacked him. And like, which is maybe a bit over the top, but
he's had a big week, Gary Neville.
He's had a big week. In fairness to Gary. And Roy Keane and Daniel Sturridge, look, went in fairly hard on him afterwards as well, called it a disgrace. But
yeah, because there's a certain element of, you know, you want matches between two top clubs to have that bit of fire and passion. But I think everyone can probably agree that there is a time and a place for it. And listen, these conversations probably wouldn't be happening if Bradley wasn't stretchered off. It makes it all look, it was bad anyway, it makes it look a hell of a lot worse. But, you know, Roy Keane's kind of famous smash into someone to make me feel better probably should be reserved for the pitch and not trying to kick someone off the sideline.
Because I was immediately thinking of Keane and Alfie Haaland. As soon as it happened, I was like, well, this is exactly like that when Haaland stands over him and says, you're not injured, as Keane writhing in agony from an ACL injury. Like, maybe it's not as big a moment as that, but obviously, I don't know. Like, at the time, I'm thinking, yeah, in our WhatsApp group with a few of the mates who are fans of various teams, they were like, game's gone. Like, agree with Gary Neville, game's gone. Back in the day, someone would come in and smash him for that on the opposing team. And like, you can add Ikemo came over and tried a little bit, and McAllister as well, but you see your teammate who looks, you're not having it, I can tell by your face, you're not having it.
But like, smashes him.
But like, someone go in, Gary Neville maybe went too far and he said, someone just take the red card. Like, back your teammate up in that moment. And I can half see the old school dinosaur narrative. Yeah, I can see where he's coming from there. Defend your teammates.
Yeah.
No? Am I wrong?
By getting a red card, you're letting down your teammate. Yeah. That'd be the end of the day.
It'd be a mad response, wouldn't it?
Some red cards are better than other red cards.
So someone comes in and just takes a shot at him, like,
Yeah, if you're pulling the last man down at minute 90 to prevent a goal, that's a noble red card.
But maybe not a full swipe and smack in the face, but maybe just go in and let Martinelli know that what he did was absolutely wrong. Make him question himself for a little nanosecond.
Yeah, but I don't think you can do it at the time. You mean like go over and grip him up straight away? I think you have a, like, if you have Virgil van Dijk, I think you have a little huddle with the Liverpool players and say, look, any sort of 60-40 ball here, take him out.
Yeah.
And there's been conversations like that in teams I've been over the years when people have got hurt or you feel somebody's left one in on purpose. You have a little chat and you say, right, if we get the chance, we line him up. And I'm sure maybe the Liverpool players did say that, but well, Martinelli left a little bit of a knee, threw the ball, like he didn't lash it at him, yeah. It was sort of a dropped one. Martinelli gets a yellow card from it, and now Gary Neville is saying somebody going to take a red. It seems a little bit out of proportion. I get that Conor Bradley could be very seriously injured. We haven't got the results of the knee scan just yet, but Martinelli didn't do that. He's trying to get him off the pitch. I get that it's a horrible, horrible thing to look at, trying to push an injured player off the pitch, but I don't think you can say, right, go and have a pop off somebody now, get a red card for it. I think it's the words of somebody who has a real disliking for Arsenal.
Yeah. It is, and you can kind of see, well, Roy Keane is obviously a certain type of character, how he held up this pent-up energy for a number of years and got Haaland back eventually. Like, but you can see how someone would do that. Like, the next time Bradley comes up against Martinelli, there is going to be that little bit of spice. Maybe it's forgotten about Conor Bradley. Maybe he's that kind of character, but...
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I know it's not necessarily lovely to look at. You kind of get it from Martinelli's point of view. Like, I assume...
Do you?
If you assume he knows, right? If you assume he I don't know if he'd know. He doesn't know the extent of what's going to happen after.
To me, immediately, and I was only watching on television, it looked immediately obvious that something was badly wrong with Bradley. It might be a twisted knee or something. It might be a broken leg or that, but it still looked like he was
The picture I seen that was convincing, where you're thinking, oh, that could be bad, is where you're looking straight at Conor Bradley. Martinelli wouldn't have seen that shot. He was obviously behind Conor Bradley when it happened, so he just sees him clearing the ball and falling over and probably thinks, he's trying it on here. I'm going to try and quicken this up, but I'm sure he's had a look at the replay, and probably as he's pushing him, the reaction of the Liverpool lads has let him realise that this is actually quite serious and I shouldn't be doing what I'm doing here. And I thought Alisson was quite good. Obviously, Brazilian teammate went and got him by the scruff of the neck and tried to cab him down a bit. Yeah, doesn't look great on the eye, but I think the game was that poor that we're highlighting this sort of stuff. I think if it was a great game and it was 3-3, nobody really cares about this. It's just a bit of fuel on the fire. The fact that it was a fairly poor game. Now, Conor Bradley probably came the closest to score with a little chip. There was a bad back pass that David Raya had a bit of a heavy touch and Conor Bradley chipped him, but it hit the post. All in all, a poor game, few little flash points, but yeah, I think the narrative, when I woke up this morning, I had a little look at Sky and a couple of the little apps on the phone. Arsenal have missed a chance. Arsenal haven't done this. Arsenal has 6 points ahead. You know what I mean? People need to go and beat Arsenal to go and get them off the perch. And people are saying, oh, Arsenal should have stood on Liverpool's throats last night. Liverpool are more desperate and needed the points than Arsenal are. Arsenal can keep people at arm's length and keep trucking on. But again, people keep saying to me, oh, Arsenal have it in the bag now. They won't be caught. Arsenal still have to play Forest away, Brentford away, Spurs away, Manchester City away, Palace away, Chelsea at home and Newcastle at home. Could easily lose two or three of those games. Easily. Mm. So to be saying that it's a... And by the way, there's Brighton's of this world as well that could easily slip you up. So these are the ones I look at and think, these are sticky games. But there's other sticky games in there that could easily be banana peel. So there's an awful long way to go. And to be 6 points ahead after 21 games, I'm absolutely over the moon.
Mm.
The narrative seems to be very different for Arsenal fans, that you're getting closer to throwing it away. You just didn't go 8 points clear. It's squeaky bum time.
Yeah. Six points is fine.
That's only the second time Arsenal have failed to score in the Premier League. Yeah, people are saying, oh, Gyökeres is awful, he's not scoring the goals, he's looked toothless up front. I get that Arsenal's XG is quite low in comparison to the other top teams in England, but yeah, we're doing fine. We're doing absolutely fine. There's no need to press the panic button, although I think a lot of people, the narrative is either is Arsenal win the league or they're a gang of bottlers.
Do you agree with that?
No, I think I take that Manchester City aren't at their fabulous best, and this is probably the best chance for Arsenal to win it. But Manchester City have done course and distance before, and with Erling Haaland going to get probably close to 30, maybe even north of 30 Premier League goals this season.
Just signed Semenyo.
And Semenyo as well.
I mean, Jesus, what an addition as well.
Well, I just think it's mad that I look at Manchester City and think at the top end of the pitch, Rays are sharp, everybody's afraid of them. At the in the defensive third, not so sure. And they go out and buy a winger. Could have done with a centre half. Like I'd have broke the bank for Mark Gahey. I'd have got him out of Palace now. If I was Manchester City, I'd say, look, get 70 million together, get 60 million. I know he's out of contract, whatever it is, and relatively, even if it's only 30 million, given he's 6 months left, go and get Mark Gahey into the building, because Liverpool are desperate for a centre half. There's so many teams desperate for a centre half now. I think if Manchester City got him, that would be a huge acquisition.
The toothless up front accusations levelled at Arsenal, like, and it's ridiculous when you look at the front three, and obviously then he changes the front three again to a completely different, unbelievable front three that follows. But there is that moment when, is it Timber plays a lovely long ball to Madueke, who's just off the bench. Madueke puts the ball into the box, into the exact area you'd want your striker or Jesus, whoever it might be, to be, and there's no one arriving. And it's like, it's that kind of thing. You need that.
Yeah, I've scored. I'm just looking. I know the numbers don't always tell everything. They have scored 40 goals.
Yeah.
It's like the lead.
It's not bad.
It's second to City with 45. So they're averaging out about 2 goals every game. And I've conceded 40.
Yeah. I started scraping the numbers on this morning. Arsenal's overall XG in the Premier League this season is 37.2, and they've scored 40 goals. So that's a decent return. Their XG from open play is 19.7.
Right.
So it's really, really low down. City's XG from open play is 27.9, so just about 28. Liverpool's XG from open play is 25.3. So they're so far down from open play, it's unbelievable. Set pieces are a massive, massive part of the game, and I've always said that, but seems like Arsenal are leaning on that a little bit too much. And when you look at Saka, Eze, Madueke, Gyökeres, Martinelli, Trossard, they should be able to create some, you know, bigger chances. And yeah, I don't know. I do feel like Arsenal are leaning on set pieces, but while they keep getting rewards from set pieces, I don't think it's a massive issue.
Yeah.
While the overall XG is as high as it is, I don't think it's a massive issue.
Now, when you're building that way as well, you've constructed it. It's not a fluke. It does feel sustainable for them. Like, it's not like it's, yeah, I wouldn't worry me at all.
Just a certain level of nitpicking, like you're top of your 6 points clear, you're top of the table, it's you're heading into January. You know, as I said, 40 goals is remarkable for considering how many of them have come from set pieces. It may not be the most beautiful football to watch. I certainly don't enjoy watching it, but
not particularly.
But it's remarkably effective.
There is that, and I think it was mentioned last night that this idea that Arsenal heading into some of the big games are more hesitant or more tentative, which you can understand, by the way. But well, the Villa game notwithstanding, obviously when they're brilliant, but there is an element of that as well, but that's natural when you're playing the bigger teams. I suppose that you're bound to be a little bit more.
Yeah,
I don't know if hesitant is the right word, but
just a little bit of edginess, I suppose.
You can feel it in the atmosphere. The atmosphere in the Emirates seemed a bit quiet or tense, which you can understand when you're in a tight little race as well.
I wrote this down last night when I was watching the game. I thought Arsenal were a better team in the first half, but in the second half, Liverpool just sucked the life out of the Emirates. It sort of, you could hear the Arsenal fans having a bit of a go every now and then to try and lift the team, but generally I thought Liverpool were much better in the second half and didn't really give Arsenal any sort of momentum. I think Arsenal had 3 shots in the second half and they all came after the 90th minute. It just goes to show you the type of game. And there was a stat while I was watching the game last night saying Liverpool's last shot was 80 odd minutes ago and Arsenal's last shot was 46 minutes ago. You're thinking, my God, this is just midfield battle, this one. The Gyökeres stat that keeps jumping out is me, he had 8 touches in 64 minutes, which, again, you know, in isolation looks awful, but what Gyökeres does is he will occupy centre-halves, even if he's not really in the game. Centre-halves don't want to be one-on-one with a big lump like that because they can get rolled. So you leave 2 centre-halves and that leaves the wingers either 1v1 or you get the opposition wingers back to double up, and then now you have piss position and you're dragging the opposition back. So he does a lot, Gyökeres, without actually getting involved in the game. You know, if I'm prepared to give him time, to be honest. You know, at the start of the season, you're looking at Šeško, Gyökeres, João Pedro. There were so many players, Ollie Watkins, that Arsenal were getting linked with. There's a real lack of top centre forwards out there. I know Harry Kane, Lewandowski, you know what I mean, realistic targets that you can go and get. So Gyökeres might be somebody we have to develop, and you know, he has to get better as we go along. But as long as the wingers keep chicking in and Eze keeps doing what he's doing, happy enough.
We're getting plenty of YouTube comments coming in. Keep them coming in, by the way, as well. Chris Fox seems to have the transfer news on the pulse here. Gehi is going to Manchester United with Glasner in the summer. Maguire going the other way.
Ah, very good. That's good to know.
Good to know. So that seems to be an exclusive.
That seems more of a hopeful text message than that.
That's why United need another centre back.
Mark Gehi's turning down City, Liverpool, all of those big Real boys, Madrid. Arsenal, but he's going to go to Manchester United.
Think of the DNA of the club.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The DNA of the club.
That's what they need.
So important. There's a couple of comments on the Martinelli one, of course. Con Brez says, Keith, take off the Arsenal glasses. Indefensible for Martinelli. No one goes down holding their knee if they're faking injury. Martinelli pushing him could have aggravated a bad injury even worse.
I never said Bradley was faking.
No,
I never defended Martinelli. I actually said it's indefendable. Yeah. What he did is awful and it looks awful. But I think there's a bit of an overreaction.
Yeah.
People are painting Martinelli to be this sort of bad apple and whatever else. I think he lost a head for 5, maybe 10 seconds in a game last night of big, big importance. And I genuinely, at the start of it, I don't think he realised Bradley was really hurt. And then he did, and he's come out and apologised. So, not defending him. If I was his teammate, I'd say you're a little bit of an egg and you need to apologise, which he has done. I'm not prepared to let it linger and think, oh, I don't like Martinelli anymore. I still think he's a wonderful player. Shouldn't have done what he did last night, but I'm prepared to forgive him.
People have odd level of expectations about those. Like, it was a massive game, like, and coming towards the end, and like, I remember the thing, like, just comes to mind, I don't know for a reason, the Sean Kavanagh, and you'll obviously have particular, sorry, of course you remember it.
Pulling down
McManus, whatever, and it's like, you're kind of like, it's a terrible thing to do. It's like against the spirit of the game. It's arguably a worse thing to do because like, it's so calculated, you know exactly what you're doing. But then at the same time, you're like, you're so in it. You're so desperate.
It's sport, yeah.
And you're so desperate for anything. And if anyone's kind of wronging you, or if you perceive anyone is kind of trying to cheat you or whatever in any way, which again, for the avoidance of doubt, he's not faking an injury. No one's suspecting anything like that. But I'm saying, like, if you think that in the split second, you'll absolutely react. Like, I don't know what people expect, like, of footballers. Like, you've got to be perfect all the time. You can't make a mistake. And if you make a mistake, someone should come across and punch you in the face. Someone should come across and punch you for that mistake. Like, what are you talking
maybe
about?
Punch, and Neville used the word punch as well. I kind of more meant just go over and square up to someone, shove into them. Maybe don't do something that gets you a red card and a suspension, but, you know, let them know you're there. And I just felt like the reaction from Bradley's teammates maybe wasn't as strong as I would have hoped. If it was me in Bradley's position, I'd have liked a teammate standing up for me.
Mm.
That was all I was thinking. You know, maybe I'm wrong. Look, players in this VAR age are very afraid to do anything that gets them looked at from the cameras above. But I don't know. That was just what I felt. Like, there's a couple of potential Spurs fans in the comments as well. Martinelli summed up Arsenal in one move. Typical Arsenal. Arsenal fellas are always on the ground. There's another comment.
All right. So why do people hate Arsenal so much?
That's Spurs fans, so you take that with a little pinch of salt. I don't know.
Well, there's no love for them. Like, nobody has any love for them. Everyone seems to be... I don't care, but like, a lot of people don't... I don't suspect if they win, people would be happy for them in any way.
I think it is... Honestly, I think what it is Arteta. I think Arteta rubs a lot of people up the wrong way, just with... And I don't know what it is about Arteta. Maybe it's his face, it's the way...
Obviously, I'm an Arsenal fan, but when I listen to Arteta, doesn't rub me up the wrong way. I look at him and think it speaks a lot of sense. I like the direction he has the Arsenal club going in. But yeah, I'm not sure. I know a lot of Irish people don't like Declan Rice, obviously because of the Irish and English thing. But again, he's still a wonderful player. I don't like what he did with Ireland, but he's still a wonderful player. Probably one of the best holding midfielders. All around centre midfielders in Europe, if not the world. But yeah, I don't know why. But I have to say, a lot of people are saying to me they'd rather Arsenal win the league than Manchester City this season. But I do take the point that I don't think there's an awful lot of neutrals out there that like Arsenal.
Yeah, strange.
I don't know. Yeah, I actually don't know why.
Is that just because there's a lot of United fans in Ireland and, you know,
particular issue with Arsenal at all. I couldn't care less.
I think it's because maybe people have Arsenal mates and they don't want that. It's like when Liverpool win and you're a United fan, you get the stick. Not many people, like, I don't know how many Man City fans I know, not many. And Man City have won different Premier Leagues under Guardiola, so there's almost like an inevitability to it. If City win the league, everyone's like,
kind of
shrugs shoulders a bit.
Yeah, it's
like,
it doesn't count.
Cares? Yeah, that
doesn't count.
If Arsenal win, it's going to be a big deal and Arteta's going to be unbearable. And that's, I think, the...
I like the variety of it. I do like the variety of it.
Yeah,
it is,
it's good for the league.
I know they've spent huge money, but they've kind of spent it fairly well.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, I think the way they've operated, it's kind of like, geez, you're looking at it sort of enviously. You'd be kind of like, geez, that's such a team they've assembled. Mm. It's like, it's just such a good team. Like, I know, like, it's just, I know they don't necessarily play the most attractive football, but there's so many great footballers.
Mm.
The little bits and pieces you see, I don't know. I think it's great.
I know you're saying about Arteta. I think Arsenal are the most complete team. When you talk about defence, midfield and attack, obviously we're saying that they're a little bit down on their XG in attack, but they're attacking players on paper. I don't think you'd swap with an awful lot of other Premier League teams. In midfield, I think they're as strong as anybody, and defensively, probably the most impressive team overall, defending set pieces especially. So I think Arsenal are the most impressive, probably not the best to watch, but you look at Manchester City and think, yeah, they're top heavy, very good going forward, but can't really defend, possibly the same with Liverpool at times. But Arsenal seem to be able to do a bit of everything. And I've always said that there's two sides to the game. You've got to be able to defend and be able to attack. You can't just say, never mind what they're doing, we'll just go and score four goals and then that'll be brilliant. Arsenal seem to be going at it the right way and take opposition into account. And that's what we're saying about the bigger games. Arsenal seem to not freeze up, but they seem to realise what's at stake and possibly get caught in the headlights a little bit. But like I say, there's some really good teams. And I have to say, I still think Manchester City are going to be there or thereabouts. Arsenal will drop points, and the Champions League, as we get deeper and deeper into that, I think Arsenal's squad is big enough and strong enough to deal with it. But I don't think they can compete on both fronts.
Mm. Robbo says, why is Shane only reading anti-Arsenal comments? Well, I read a couple of pro-Liverpool comments here as well. Quirky says, Liverpool made one forced sub in 90 minutes. Great to see a team being left as a unit for 90 minutes. The use of five subs is killing the last 30 minutes of the game.
I see they didn't have a shot on target for the first time in 600 games.
All right.
It's like in 16 years or something.
Wow.
That's some stat.
Maybe a few changes would have been welcome.
Possibly, yeah.
It's so funny the way the narratives are built, as if with Arsenal, it's like, oh, well, they don't, like, they're, you know, they don't go forward. They're very safe, very conservative. No shot on target in six. I think the last time was like, I have it there, James Pearce. So 16 years, it was a 1-0 defeat to Wigan in March 2010.
Jesus.
So that's the last time they didn't have a shot on target. Now, it's an outlier. It's like, it's one game. It doesn't necessarily tell you an awful lot, but it is funny with these games. How afterwards it's always Arsenal who have been the problem.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, hold on, like, a weave it here. Like, I know Arsenal have injuries as well, like, or Liverpool have injuries as well, but like.
Did you see the state of the Liverpool press in the first half?
Strange.
I was looking at it and I'm trying to get some sort of shape and I'm thinking, is that a forward at the back? What's that in midfield? And there was just bodies running all over the place. At one time, Szoboszlai was the forwardest forward, then it was Wirtz, other times it was McAllister. And I think Arnie Slot just told his Liverpool players to lock on. Whoever you're with, if he runs over to the other side of the pitch, just run with him. Just mark him. And it's very simplistic stuff, but if you're, say, a left winger and the fella you're marking runs the length of the pitch or the width of the pitch, you've talked to your centre midfielder and say, you take him, I'll take the other fella.
Yeah,
and
track.
Don't just keep running like a blind, you know, like a blind chicken. It was mad at times and Arsenal didn't quite.
That was like me at the Astro last night. running like a blind chicken. Yeah.
But I just thought it was crazy. A bit of communication sorts that all out very, very easily. But yeah, it was crazy trying to put a shape on Liverpool yesterday, especially in the first 45 minutes out of possession, all over the place.
Kerkez and Frimpong, two good standout performers for Liverpool.
Yeah, I thought Kerkez did well overall. There was once or twice when Saka went past him, but that's going to happen when you're up against an elite winger at times. And yeah, I like Kerkez. I think he's starting to build into a Frimpong. I think it is good, but the reason I think he's good is because he has Bradley behind him. I think if Frimpong was coming as a right back and he was getting, you know, that amount of attack and play, I think he might be exposed going the other way. But letting him off the leash as a right winger with Conor Bradley behind him, I think, is a good ploy. And yeah, I think the Liverpool signings are starting to get that little bit better. Wirtz is starting to get better. And I thought that was a little bit embarrassing as well. The Wirtz penalty in the first half, the penalty appeal, there's a little bit of a bump there. It's not a dive. It's nowhere near enough for a penalty. But I think it was Gabriel went to pick him up, put his arms under his armpits and went to lift him up. And he put his arms up in the air and went limp. Like a child who said, oh, I'm not getting out of bed yet, daddy. Yeah. Just like, I'm not getting up. Well, you're hurt. No, it's just throwing themselves on the ground. I think there's an awful lot wrong with Premier League football in terms of how long it takes to get the ball back in play, set pieces, throw-ins, people just lying on the ground when they're not really hurt. Yeah, and you know, people want to get really annoyed about the Martinelli stuff. The goalkeeper's going down pretending they're injured, like, and people having team meetings. That's a real bugbear of mine. Real.
Yeah. There's plenty of other games during the week. The Gabrielle header, by the way, at the end in the back post. She thought for a split second this is going to be another famous winner from a set piece. We should talk Spurs as well. Eve, I know you're absolutely desperate to talk Spurs.
Pretty
miserable night at Bournemouth. So Spurs players arguing with fans, particularly Van de Ven and Parra with the full-time whistle. Thomas Frank holding an Arsenal cup, and Christian Romero's social media post. So for anyone who hasn't seen the social media post, I know you've been talking about it the last couple of days, but at times like this, it should be other people coming out to speak, but they don't, as has been happening for several years now. That was the interesting line. He appeared to edit the post afterwards, apparently. Where do you want to start there? The cup, the post on social media, or the players going after the fans?
I think the players going after the fans I'll start with, because we've seen it before. I think Eric Dier ran up the stands years and years ago. I really don't mind the players. Again, kind of what you were saying, Arthur, there's a level of adrenaline after a football match, especially when losing so late in the game. The manager having a dig at the fans, as has been happening in recent weeks and months, is maybe less defensible. Similarly, holding an Arsenal cup. I thought it was AI initially, kind of in the sceptical age living in.
Fair enough, I was like,
someone stitched him up there. That's a, you know, a Spurs fan who's just dissatisfied with everything that's happening. But no, the leftover cups from when Arsenal were playing there the week before.
Is that what it was, right?
Yeah, so it was in the away dressing room.
I was like, where has he got this? Where has he picked this up?
But how he managed to get from the away dressing room out onto the pitch in the view of photographers, seemingly with his assistants and his team around him, and nobody mentioned to put that down.
PR team surely go have to spot that and go here.
It's such an own goal.
I know, and I know it's such a small thing, by the way. We love to talk about the likes of this in the media, but it's hilarious.
Amazing work from the photographer.
Fantastic.
Spotted.
Yeah.
What a photograph.
It's just like, I'd say he could not, because he probably wasn't holding, you know, when you're holding a cup, like, he probably is moving a fair bit. You probably don't have that long to nail that.
Yeah.
Can you imagine when you tweaked it, when you're looking down the lens and you thought, is that an Arsenal press?
All the things.
Oh God.
It's brilliant.
I think it's when you get to this stage in the season where fans are dissatisfied and results aren't coming, it's those little things that suddenly become massive. Mm. Like, not only are Spurs not playing attractive football, not only are they not winning games, and in fact losing games you definitely should be at least getting a draw out of, and to top it all off, your manager's coming out onto the pitch with an Arsenal cup. It's just a kind of one of those silly things that take on a lot more traction, considering I think Bournemouth hadn't won since October.
Mm.
And it's not they play good football, they score goals, but for Semenyo to have signed, basically, for all intents and purposes, signed for another club and then go on to score.
Yeah, it's just the nail in the coffin, really, isn't it?
Which is frustrating because Spurs' two goals were very good.
Yeah.
Tell's first one, obviously this is the only game I watched on whatever it was, Wednesday, for my sins, but I really enjoyed watching Tell's goal because that's kind of like cut into the box, like Sonny used to do, shoot it along the ground like Kane used to do. It was just really, really beautiful. I went, oh, this is nice. We have a young player who can maybe, if Frank uses him in a nice way, can help us. And then Paulinho's random, incredible bicycle kick. And I thought, okay, even if we get a draw here, these are two kind of good points, good moments that we can build on going on. You know, Spurs can build on because they're playing Villa this weekend. So you want to go into that game.
All right, is that a home?
That is... I want to say.
Oh, I think it's away actually as well. Because I think they won at Spurs earlier in the season, didn't they?
It's at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
That's the FA Cup game.
It's the FA Cup.
Sorry.
That's probably Tottenham would want to be playing away from home, considering they have five losses this season at home. I was there for one of them. I was there for the Wolves game.
Oh yeah, Jesus.
Is
that the draw?
That was the draw with Paulinho scored and took off his shirt, and then spent the whole journey home giving out about it, and then he put on Instagram that it was, you know, for his granny or something.
I don't know why players like Richarlison obviously did it against Liverpool, didn't he? And what was the game? There was another game last week where someone scores, they think it's the winner, and then there's a late equaliser. It was a few days ago. I can't remember who did it, but either way, it's just not something you want to be. You don't want to count your chickens, take the jersey off.
You're tempting fate.
Yeah, essentially
at that stage.
Yeah, bizarre.
Why have how long do you think he'll last?
Richarlison?
No, Frank.
Oh.
Just looking, he's second favourite, by the way, to the sack race. Nuno Espirito Santo is favourite, 4-5. Thomas Frank, second favourite, and Scott Parker, third. Joint third with Arne Slot.
I think that the issue with Frank is that since Levy has left and there's this sort of new ownership model at Spurs where you have the Lewis family and then the board who seem to have been taking a lot of consideration from what fans have been saying in recent years, which is you don't give managers enough time and you don't back them in the transfer windows. So they are very committed to giving Thomas Frank a lot of time and backing him in this transfer window. There's been rumours of a war chest. And of course, since selling Brennan Johnson and then Mohamed Kudus getting injured, you're going to be needing to buy some players. But at the same time, I think it's probably worse to give time to and back monetarily the wrong manager. I think that's probably worse than just this cycle of sacking and hiring. So the longer that Spurs are sitting in the bottom half of the Premier League, 14th right now, and you would say, well, that's pretty consistent with the form that was shown last season. But at that point last season, it was kind of, especially by the new year already, okay, you're focusing on the Europa League and we'll just do away with everything else.
We
haven't really reached that stage yet, or we shouldn't have reached that stage yet. We're not in a cup run at any point at the moment. So I think that's why there's a lot of frustration and a lot of fans thinking, well, if Levy was still here, he'd be gone. You don't know what you have until it's gone.
Oh, sorry, that's already gone to that stage. Oh, no, there's a lament for good Lord.
Yeah, I think the Arsenal play football, maybe that isn't the most beautiful to watch, but they do get results and they score goals, and it's in, you know, they're at the end of the day, they sit top of the table. Thomas Frank isn't utilising, I think, the players in the correct way. And I will say with a caveat, there's still a lot of injuries.
Yeah.
Kulusevski has been out for a very long time. Solanke is out for a very long time.
Madison as well.
Madison, of course, with ACL. Bentancur, hamstring injury against Bournemouth. Bergvall, we don't know him yet, but muscle injury as well. So anything that kind of can go wrong is going wrong. So I don't think he'll last till the end of the season, but I think it needs to change. Something needs to happen sooner than later there's three pretty woeful teams in the bottom three of the Premier League, which I think Spurs can be thankful for.
Oh, you're safe. You're not getting relegated. You're not going down.
Well, 27 points. I'd prefer to have a lot more than that at this stage in the season.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much quality is actually in that Spurs team. I know the injuries are spot on. Madison, Kulusevski, Udogi, Solanke, Kudus, Papasar and Basuma are at AFCON. But when you look at the starting 11 against Bournemouth, like Colo Muani, not somebody, I don't think there's, you know, top six Premier League teams banging down the door to get him. The same with Matthias Tell. Xavi Simmons is somebody who I've seen an awful lot of in a Dutch short, and I thought, yeah, he could possibly do something, but being underwhelming. Bergvall is somebody I look at and think, yeah, okay, there might be something there, but he's still learning. Jal Paninha, Mickey van de Ven and Romero, I think are the three players that other Premier League teams would look at and think, yeah, okay, they're decent players. But the rest of them, like Pedro Porro, I know Spurs fans like him. I think he's an absolute liability going backwards. He can do wonderful things going forward. He'll put balls into top corners. He'll give you good assists, but can't defend anywhere near the level required. Jed Spence is somebody who's getting better. But I do think the overall quality has come down, but the likes of Madison coming back from injury at the start of the next season will be a big plus. But yeah, they've got better than last season, Spurs, but there's just a flakiness to them that when things go tough, a lot of people go missing. And yeah, I think when you've got Romero being so emotional, I mean, it was only last season before the European final, he was saying he wanted to play in Spain. And then he signs a new deal and now he's coming out and giving out about the board. He just seems so temperamental. And I don't think Spurs reach the next level with Christian Romero at the heart of the defence. I think they keep just pondering on the way they are now, unless they get rid of an awful lot of good players, but not players to bring Spurs to the next level.
And also the Romero, I said he edited the post, by the way. He said at the end of the post, I said, at times like this, it should be other people coming out to speak, but they don't, as has been happening for several years now. They only show up when things are going well to tell a few lies. And in the edited post, he cuts out the "to tell a few lies" part.
So when Spurs draw 2-2 with Bournemouth, and he wants somebody else to come out and talk, he's the captain of the club.
Who's it? Is it pointed at the Lewis fan? Like,
I don't know. Who's he talking about? Yeah. Come out and talk after the game.
I'm not sure who he's referring to.
It's strange,
and it's. I think a lot of Spurs fans appreciated that just because everyone's angry at everyone at the moment. But at the same time, you want your captain and your first choice defender, who's a World Cup winner and a European trophy winner, to maybe do his talking on the pitch a bit more than he is in the last few games. I don't subscribe fully to the theory that he's a liability for Spurs. I think, you know, there's Premier League commentators who will always kind of over-exaggerate. He hasn't got a red card in about 2 years. Like, he's not that much of a liability. Yeah. I think he's a world-class defender. But at the same time, I think he is bolstered by Spurs players around him playing well. I don't think he's a player that can, or we've not seen this season, he's a player that can bring a team along with him through these very tough patches. And that's all Spurs seem to be encountering at the moment.
We should mention Brentford and Keith Andrews. Obviously, we tend to talk about them quite a lot, but they're fifth in the Premier League table now, 33 points after their 21 games, just two behind Liverpool in fourth as well. And the other night, obviously, the 3-0 win over Sunderland. Random stat as well, Igor Thiago, 16 goals, makes him the highest scoring Brazilian for a single season in the Premier League, beating out Matheus Cunha's record from last season, Martinelli and Firmino, which is interesting. And Quevin Kelleher, another record for him. He's now saved 4 out of 6 penalties that he's faced, with his 67% save percentage now the highest of any player in the Premier League history who has faced 5 or more penalties. He's getting a reputation, but it was one of those penalties where you're like...
Yeah, he could have took it down on his chest, couldn't he? Could have controlled it.
You can't get away with that, can you?
No, you can't. You can't be doing Panenkas. If you do a Panenka, you've got a score. Otherwise, you're in big, big trouble. I was telling you off air, I was part of a pre-season tour that Blackburn went. I think we were in Austria, or one mad country somewhere. But we played Sporting Lisbon in a pre-season friendly, and it went to penalties, and I missed my penalty. It went all the way to sudden death. I think I was 7th or 8th on the list, and I missed. The Sporting Lisbon player then missed, and it went back to Blackburn, and a player, a German winger called Sergio Peter, went for a Panenka, and the goalkeeper caught it, and then Sporting Lisbon scored their next penalty and won. And Mark Hughes went absolutely through Sergio. He was in the reserves for the next 6 months, and I was absolutely over the moon because the two of us were left wingers, so my little bit of competition had been thrown down to the reserves for a couple of months. But he told me there and then, he said, if you're going to miss properly like I did, you don't miss like that. So an easy penalty save for Quevin, but the Thiago stuff is brilliant. Come in, you know, they paid €33 million for Thiago from Club Brugge.
Right.
He's totally, like, you look at his numbers before he went into Brentford, and nothing really to write home about. Surely he's going to get a Brazil cap. He has to. Like, I'm looking at the last couple of players that have started for Brazil. Cunha, Vinicius Jr., Estevao, Rodrigo, and João Pedro's been coming off the bench. The majority of those are wingers. I know João Pedro is an out-and-out centre-forward, but Thiago is outscoring him. So 24 years of age as well.
Yeah.
A lot of improvement to be doing. And I've heard Keith Andrews speak about him and saying, you know, he's maximising his ability. He's not somebody that, you know, sort of coasts into training and he reaches these levels on a Saturday and then comes back down. He's sort of always on it. And that's exactly what you want. And as I say, at 24, when you think what he could be at 28, 29, 30, when he really starts to reach his peak, could be an elite striker.
Well, where would he be when he's 26? Like, yeah. You know, did Brentford obviously sell these players eventually that they kind of bring through and that are really good players, and you'd imagine he won't be at Brentford in a couple of years?
Well, I mean, if Brentford are looking strong to get European football this season, you know, there's no reason why he maybe couldn't.
Stay put for next year.
Yeah, I mean, that was the issue, or the claim that was made about Kelleher at the beginning of the season. Oh, he's signed for Brentford now. The managers who wanted him is gone. Now this is going to be terrible. And he's having a fantastic season.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think Thiago's best thing now is keep doing exactly what you're doing, where you're doing it. He's only 24, you know.
Is he the best keeper? Sorry, this could be green-tinted glasses, but is he the best keeper in the Premier League at the moment?
No. David Raya.
Right, okay, yeah, fair enough.
Is that Arsenal like, glasses again? Here no, we go but like YouTube comments.
Yeah, but like it depends what you're... Are you based not off penalties?
No.
I suppose that's his high kind of profile.
Well, his shot stopping is immense as well. And in fairness for Brentford, he faces a lot of shots.
Yeah, it's all kind of, you need to take it in its context.
Yeah.
You know, like Arsenal's back line is a lot stronger than Brentford's.
Yeah.
So Raya's maybe not facing as many shots as Kelleher would on within a 90-minute period.
He's top three. He's top three keepers in the Premier League.
I think he's definitely up there. I don't think he's quite at the summit.
Do you not think so? Well, who would you have? Rea, I accept, but...
Donnarumma, Alisson.
Well, Donnarumma, yeah.
Donnarumma, yeah. Martinez, like...
No.
Yeah.
I take Keller. What else? Well,
just like, fair play. Okay. He's had a bit of a career. I'm stretching
it out to top five now. I'm actually backtracking as you're naming goalkeepers.
I'm not even slagging off. It's just, it's really hard to know. It's like, it's really hard to know when you go down through it. Like, even...
Nick Pope.
Yeah. Well, but who's your man at Sunderland as well? Like,
Robin Roofs, is it?
Roofs,
good keeper.
Like, I'm not saying that. I'm not watching of Sunderland where I'm not even sure of his name. Mm. But like... yeah, it's hard to know, isn't it? Like, but like his penalty thing is legitimately off the charts. Like, it's
even Jordan Pickford made a wonderful save as well during the week. He's not somebody I'd be the biggest fan of, but I think generally when Jordan gets a bit bored, he comes out off his line and has to get involved in the game, where his keeper should be happy enough not to be getting used. But he makes some great saves. Even Jordan Pickford, like at Everton, England number one. You'd expect the England number one to be in a top six club, but. Yeah, there's some decent goalkeepers out there, but I think David Raya is right up there.
Fair enough.
Could I check a quick thing here? I'm looking up. Would that tour have been in 2008?
Which tour?
Your one with Blackburn.
Or to Austria. Or
yeah, that'd have been about right.
So it seems to have been played in possibly Lisbon. Would you play Benfica as well?
Yeah. Yeah, was I in Portugal?
Well, I think that's what it suggests. It suggests I was in Portugal. But what just struck out to me from the timeline is there's every chance, amongst other players in the Benfica team, if you played in that game, you would have been playing against Ruben Amorim.
Does that ring a bell?
He played 35. It's very hard to get details from one life.
He looked different. He had the kind of shorter hair back then.
Do you remember was he Egyptian? Remember Mido?
Was Mido on the team?
He went to Middlesbrough. He was quite a little bit heavy. Yeah. I'm sure he was up front for Sporting Lisbon. And
he might have been Sporting. But like the Benfica, again, I don't know if they played in this game, but the Benfica team that season, you have David Luiz, Nuno Gomes, Angel Di Maria.
Yeah, no, this is all right, because it was like a little mini group. So we played against each other, and then I went to penalties at the end to see how we went. But
Pablo Aimar.
Threw me in left back. Okay. against these lads, and I think Michael Gray or somebody got injured. Like, Keith, you play left back. He's like, oh, cheers for that one. But that was just against Ruben Amorim.
Well, probably. I don't know, but probably. He played 35 games that season, so he was obviously a regular enough starter. Jose Antonio Reyes there as well.
Reyes, yeah.
But that's it. You bet Benfica 3-2.
Now, hold on. So AI has told me, and correct me if I'm wrong, AI has told me this, right? Blackburn played against Benfica in a pre-season friendly match on July 25th, 2008.
That's right, yeah.
Which Blackburn won 3-2. This is AI, which is often wrong. Keith Andrews did not participate in this friendly because he had not yet signed for Blackburn. He completed his transfer from MK Dons to the Premier League on August 28th, 2008. That's what AI thinks, over a month after the match took place. It was part of the Algarve Football Cup. That's what AI thinks happened.
Never played for MK Dons.
I don't know where AI gets this. Like, where does this come from? This is the danger of it, by the way.
Did you sign anyone for MK Dons?
That's a good question.
No, Keith would be the only one, wouldn't he? Did we sign from MK Dons?
Oh, there you go.
Keith Andrews, I said. Sorry, Keith Andrews. Keith Andrews. So AI is potentially correct.
Anyway. Keith.
Hell of a team, that Benfica team.
I apologise to AI, by the way, because
I didn't even know what country I was in. He must have been a pretty good team.
Well, you bet them 3-2. Morten Gams-Pedersen, Jason Roberts and Brett Emerton with the goals.
Right.
Yeah, so Morten had played left wing and I'd have been left back.
There you go.
Or maybe it was Stephen Warnock. Somebody got injured and I ended up back there.
We're doing very quick research here.
Great crack.
I've also researched Sergio Peter, your German friend who had the Panenka, and his career, I have to say, after that penalty, went off a cliff.
No, that's very harsh. This is very much like that. Like, you remember that Jake Humphrey thing on DT?
Yeah.
Scotty Canham. Yeah. It's like, don't call me like that.
He played for Blackburn from 05 to 09, 17 appearances in that time, and the highlight was probably he was... man of the match in a game against QPR in the FA Cup third round in 2006. They won 3-0 and he set up all three goals, was named man of the match. But then he was sent out on loan to Cercle Brugge and then signed for Sparta Prague in 2009, played for a couple of teams I've never heard of after that. But at Sparta Prague, he was named by iSport, a Czech news agency, as the worst foreign player to appear in the Czech First League in the last 10 seasons. So his career went off a cliff a little bit. So all after that penalty, no doubt, Keith.
Jeez. Well, like you here, I'm all over the shop now because you know that fella. I've never properly seen it. The guy who checks out the football stories.
Stories
footballer. The only issue with this is that Well, the only issue with this is that Paul Ince was the Blackburn manager.
Yeah, I played under Paul Ince.
Well, you said it was Mark Hughes.
Did he? See, I also thought he was in Austria.
He was gone. Mark Hughes was gone from June 8th, so maybe it was the season before. It's all order shop.
People need to understand, I was drinking very heavily during all of this, so all of these things happened. I'm just not sure of the sequence of who was the manager or what country I was in, but I definitely played against Benfica and Sporting Lisbon, and I missed a penalty.
I wonder if it was Amarin you played. Yeah, it would be funny.
It would. Well, you probably played that game. There's not a whole lot up on it.
No, that's what I'm going to tell everybody now. I played against Ruman Amarin because Arthur told me I did.
That's a good chance.
It's amazing the research a footballer would have to do if they were writing an autobiography, because you go back and you're trying to find details about games and pre-season games.
They're not writing their own autobiography.
No, that's the thing too. There's a lot of ghostwriters involved. A lot of research for them ghostwriters, clearly.
Oh, yeah.
You had an interesting stat about Nuno as well. As I say, Nuno Espirito Santo is the favourite to be sacked next.
If he is to get sacked, he'll be the first manager / coach, because God knows what people are called these days, to be sacked twice in a season. Obviously, he was at Forest at the start and got the bullet pretty early. And he's favourite to go at West Ham. And West Ham haven't won a Premier League game since the 8th of November. And that was against Burnley. And in the meantime, they've lost to Wolves and they've just lost to Nottingham Forest. Mm. I said, I think it was probably 10 days ago, maybe even sooner than that. I think they'll get out of it. In less than 2 weeks, I've completely turned around and think they won't get out of it. I'm looking at them defensively, absolutely all over the shop in midfield. I don't think they have enough up front. They've got Jared Bowen, who will score goals for them, but I don't think it's enough. I really think they're way, way, way off the pace, and with Leeds doing what they're doing, I know Nottingham Forest are the closest team to West Ham, but I don't see them catching Nottingham Forest and I don't see them catching Leeds, which means they're going to go.
Our other resident Spurs person on the show, Bobby Dwyer. Players going at the fans at Spurs. It was only one or two fans in particular. Romero is bang on about those who are ruining the club. Frank, the worst manager the club have had in Premier League era. Get him out. It's a big Spurs fan there.
Yeah, in the Premier League era.
It's a big shout.
Postecoglou had the worst finish, didn't he?
At least he won. Yeah, he won the Europa League though, but the Premier League. Yeah,
I'm a zealot. I'm like one of these religious zealots. You know.
So you're sticking with Frank.
Oh no, with Ange. I take him back tomorrow.
I want Frank on.
He's hot. And I think poor Nuno, we were just talking about him. I think his sort of 6 week tenure in between Mourinho and Conte at Spurs
is an
overlooked but pretty dismal era. Mm. Which
Jacques Santini.
Yeah. You did this. Was it yourselves that named every Spurs fan Spurs manager of the Premier League era, and you got all of them?
I think we got a good go at them.
Santini's a great quiz question.
Remarkable, yeah. Jackson.
Your man Christian Gross. I was before my time now, but
Jesus,
I know he's not well regarded.
Good memory.
I know we're at the tail end here nearly, Shane. There's just one junior. Oh, what's his surname? It's not the surname. Junior JZE is asking Keith, how good was Tugai?
Mm. Unbelievable. Probably right up there with one of the best players I played with, if not the best. Just the way he can control a ball. I sort of gravitate towards these players who look like they're not really trying that much and don't really put that much into it. I don't know why. You know, when a player turns up and he gives 100% and he's in the gym and he's a body like an Adonis, I sort of look and go, yeah, okay. But Tugai was somebody who drank Coca-Cola, smoked in between games, smoked at half time, would cheat and bleep test, would train when he wanted to, didn't do gym sessions. But he was unbelievable.
Where are you smoking at half time in the noughties?
The disabled toilet.
Oh wow.
I swear to God, before you break into the first team at Blackburn, you have to be a ball boy. So I would be the ball boy and he'd put me on the wing. So I'd be right next to the tunnel to watch the wingers going up and down. So Keith, have a look at Brett, have a look at Martin and learn your game. And 2 minutes before half time, I would always get a little elbow saying, get in and get two guys fags out of his suit.
Really?
And I'd be standing in the tunnel and Tugai would come and get them into the jacks, have a smoke. Mark Hughes would go into the shower and like have a word with Eddie Nezwicki and talk about what they're going to say at half time, but they'd be really waiting on Tugai to finish his smoke and come back in. Unbelievable. There was a good few players smoked back in the day. I don't think it's much of a thing, but yeah, and being Turkish, I think smoking is quite a big thing in Turkey as well. So, but look, when he's volleying balls in from 35 yards out into the top corner,
do what he wants.
It's hard to tell him what he can and can't be doing.
Fair point. Yeah, Jesus.
A brilliant personality as well. Like he sat behind me whenever we'd fly down to London or anywhere, he'd always sat behind me on the plane and constantly messing like a big kid. But brilliant. I absolutely love Tugai. Brilliant footballer, brilliant personality, and yeah, loads of time for him.
Class.
There you go, Junior JZ.
Yeah. Bobby's given a suggestion as well. Pochettino back in the summer. Redknapp interim. Run it back.
Ryan Mason interim. Pochettino back in the summer.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, Mason just got sacked, didn't he?
He just got sacked.
Yeah.
With an awful away record at West Brom, something like lost 10 in a row away. But that's exactly what Spurs need, is a manager who can win at home.